I got shooters touch. Can't nobody ball like me.
I was getting a lot of no letters. And I kept some of the letters because it was like motivation for me.
I was young in my coaching career. I did know that those guys I was coaching, this was their one opportunity.
If you really want the players to like you, just make them better.
If I want to keep playing this game, you know, as a job, I have to continue to get better at that.
You have to figure out a way to carve out some value that you have that you can bring not only to your team but also your profession.
It's really good information, and I pick up little nuggets all the time.
For me, it's all about confidence, man. You have to have confidence to be a shooter, to be a basketball player in general, to have success. It's all about confidence. If they walk a mile in my shoes, then they can ball like I do. But my game different, not the same
with it. I travel now, y'all just change pivots. Shooters, welcome in to another episode of the Shooters Touch podcast. We're kicking things back here, way back, kind of how this whole thing started. Birthed actually right before COVID, but the reason why is we started bringing some extended coverage of Drake and UNI basketball. And so tonight it's just Adam and I, and we are going to talk Drake and UNI basketball, both men's and women's. We'll kind of go through the UNI women ended their NIT run tonight, and so all four teams are now done with the season. So we thought it would be a good chance to go through and recap and talk a little bit about how things went this year and what to look forward to next year. But another one, Adam, big news, breaking news. Obviously, by the time you guys listen to this podcast, everybody in Iowa knows that Coach Darren DeVries has moved on to West Virginia. It wasn't a matter really of if, I think it was where. Adam, as we were kind of going through, I would say I felt like for the last month and a half, probably realistically, then it got more and more serious as more openings came available. And then obviously them losing their first round matchup over in Omaha, felt like things really picked up. And we heard tonight to West Virginia. What was your initial thoughts or reactions when you saw that?
Yeah, honestly, I think you're right when you say it was when, not if. And I had heard a couple schools, a couple names in there, you know, obviously with us being here in Iowa, Iowa was one of them. You know, I know a lot of Hawkeye fans wanted or might still want the Fran era to be over for some reason. And obviously, you know, somebody sliding over from the Des Moines area to Iowa City would be an easy transition for, you know, I feel both parties. But so Iowa was there. Oklahoma State was another one that, you know, was in the mix, I believe. You know, just in my head, I feel like the West Virginia job was probably number three on that list, just from people I've talked to, not necessarily from any, you know, sources that are close to anything. But however, you know, good for him. Really, really sucks for the Missouri Valley, sucks for the Des Moines area, you know, and obviously Drake as well. But, you know, there were some really good years in there, you know, the five or six that he was there. And, you know, I think he's going to do great things. He's a really good coach. You know, a lot of that depends on players you can get, maybe even who he's going to bring with, and assistants he could potentially be asking to make the trip with him. You know, now we move over to, you know, chatting about replacements. I've heard a couple names, you know, on our end specifically are pretty close with Marty Richter, an assistant there. He has head coaching experience. I think he'd be an absolute rock star as the head coach of Drake. Have heard a couple more names. Ben McCollum's another one. You know, this came from Twitter, I believe, but he had accepted, and I'm talking about Ben McCollum right now, had accepted the Missouri State opening. And then I believe he backed out when he may have caught wind that the Drake opening might be opening up as well. So, you know, truth or not, I think we'll find out here probably pretty quick. I know, you know, the AD over there, Brian Harden, likes to move pretty quick on these things. And if he has a list in mind, probably get things going pretty quickly. But yeah, tough here on the Drake side and, you know, the Des Moines side, Missouri Valley side. But, you know, happy for Coach DeVries. Obviously a great coach and will do great things out there in West Virginia.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think obviously then the other domino will be Tucker. All assumptions are that he'll probably go with, as he probably should. I mean, realistically, what does he have on an individual basis? What does he have left to prove at Drake? You know, be a good experience for him to go out there and play in the Big 12 and kind of see what he needs to do to continue to polish his game. I'm sure if you asked him and his dad, both of them still would love to win and have another opportunity to run it back at Drake. But when these opportunities come up, it's just, I mean, you just gotta go and see what it is. And, you know, and it was one of those things where there was no question that those guys were Drake blue and white when they were here. And so it feels like it's a little bit easier of a transition where sometimes you kind of get that, you know, where you feel like this guy's 1 foot out the door. He's just looking for the next big thing. It's never felt that way with those guys. And so credit to everything that they were able to do, you know, here at Drake, and definitely will be missed. What's next? We talked about it. I mean, Marty Richter seems to make sense from a head coaching experience. I know he's just been boots on the ground as far as getting many of these guys that have been here the last 6 years that have won all these basketball games. Marty's a big part of that. He has a coaching, like you said, head coaching experience. You know, he's been around the block too. He's kind of coached at different levels. He's coached at different universities, which I think always kind of lends itself well, just because you're picking up nuggets here and there as much as you can. I know the guy wants the job. I know he'd do really well at it. He would pour everything that he's got into it, this community, Iowa guy. And so, I mean, let's go. Let's give Marty a chance. I mean, like you said, obviously there's going to be some names and some people that are going to certainly be interested in that job. The McCollum situation is interesting because four D2 championships or national titles down there, which is crazy. It feels like dang near every P6 school at least inquire on him over the last 12, 15 years, how long ever he's been down there. Pretty much turned them all down. And so now the fact that he was going to make a change and then says, nah, hold on a minute. Like, I want to go possibly back to Iowa. You know, I guess we would obviously say a better job in the Valley. Will be interesting to see what that looks like. And then if it doesn't work in his favor or what, I mean, how that ends for McCollum as well.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, maybe just, you know, a plug for somebody that I'm close with Marty Richter, but, I've been in this situation one time in my life, and it was at UNI when Coach McDermott left to go to Iowa State. They brought in one of his assistants, and I think it's worked out pretty well for them up in Cedar Falls. So, you know, if anybody in with the right connections is listening, think about that one.
Well, I said earlier too, actually I tweeted out, obviously on the women's side, bringing Allison Pullman in.
Correct. Yes.
You know, who was longtime assistant under Bronicek when Jenny was here, seemed to make sense. And not a lot's changed. I mean, truthfully, like, so comparing the women's side, I mean, the style, they do some things differently, but they still get up and down. They score a lot of points. They win a lot of games. It seemed like, yeah, there's a learning curve in there, but it seems like it's just easier to kind of pick things up than it is if you go completely reboot, fresh start type of scenario. And let's be honest, unless it's somebody like a Richter who's there and who kind of can pick things up and keep the morale where it's at, it's hard. I mean, Darren showed us that it almost not realistic the way that he came in with one player on the roster, no coaching staff, and a short time frame to be able to come out and win his first year is crazy. Like, you just can't expect that to happen with assuming some roster turnover. You know, like we said, obviously Tucker's probably gone. Brody, you know, not going to be there, a big piece of that as well. And then what happens from there, from a commit standpoint, you know, and then obviously some of the younger guys too, you know, Kevin Overton, Enright, Adenright. I mean, all those guys too. I mean, you know, where are they at or where does their loyalties lie? If and when a new or different guy comes in too. So it just feels like, we're sitting here Sunday night recording this. There's just a lot of question marks, but hopefully a lot of excitement still around the Drake program.
For sure. And, you know, I know this probably would never go into a decision to hire a head coach, because you got to hire the best coach, right? That can't be something yet. You you know, hire somebody that you don't feel is the best coach. But, you know, with the transfer portal these days, probably a good segue to what we're going to talk about next. But, you know, you bring somebody brand new in, and that opens you and your university, your team up to, you know, potential mass exodus of these players that just made the NCAA tournament. And, you know, like I said, that's not something that I would make a decision on, obviously, but, you know, outsiders looking in, you got to think about that too. You bring in an assistant coach who's been there. These players are used to probably, less of a chance of them entering that portal. And maybe even keeping some of this NCAA tournament team you just had intact, in the future for future success.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. A lot of things go into the decision-making. Hopefully it all happens kind of quick because, like you said, it is a very vital time here as people's mm-hmm. seasons continue to end and people start to jump in the portal and changes start to happen. We need to know who's at the helm here. As soon as possible to be able to continue to keep things moving forward. And yes, as you kind of alluded to, a good segue over to the UNI men's program and a little bit of uncertainty as far as what's going on there, more so from a roster standpoint. Coaching staff and everything seems to kind of be intact and kind of know what is there and to be expected. But as of tonight, five guys this past week have jumped in the portal for UNI and guys have played big roles. And so trying to figure out where and how they're going to fill some of these pieces. What do you know or hear of what's going on up there in Cedar Falls?
Yeah, you know, not a lot that, you know, I know 100%, but yeah, it was a rough couple of days there after that season ended. Just seeing, you know, all those kids enter the transfer portal. And, you know, honestly, with Nate Heisey being probably the one up there that's like, man, we could really use him in Cedar Falls. You know, Michael Duax obviously filled in very well for him previously when Heisey was injured and redshirting. He's in the portal. Landon Wolf, just a knockdown shooter, and actually had a very good last half quarter of the year. A lot more aggressive, you know, going to the basket, you know, played very good defense, you know, while he was out there. So those three specifically, you know, when we're talking about the next year and even 2 years down the road, are big losses. You know, obviously assuming that, hey, I'm in the portal, I'm going somewhere else, but, you know, they could always come back. There's always that option, I believe. But honestly, just something we haven't been used to at UNI. You know, a couple of years ago, we had Noah Carter. He was in the portal a couple times, but never had this type of thing go on where, hey, we have multiple people that could and probably would play a huge role on the team next year, wanting, you know, obviously voicing their opinion that they want to get out. And so, you know, I think that's a little bit of an issue too, that it's just not something we've been used to in Cedar Falls.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see what, how, and if, like you said, some of these guys land or where they land and if and why. I think, too, like, you know, from our side, we'll get some information and more will come out. We'll understand a little bit more as things kind of move along. But sometimes you just have to read between the lines and see, like, oh, seems like more playing time, different fit, you know, whatever it was. You know, like I said, with Heisey, it feels like, you know, he might have an opportunity to where he can do something, you know, at a higher level, in a role position or something where, you know, he's got a chance to really compete at that level. And so it'll be interesting to see how that looks. What do we think about on Cole Henry? What, obviously he kind of went through senior night. It was, you know, he's using his fifth year, which is totally fine, but, I don't know. I'll be interested to see kind of where he shakes out and what he ends up doing from that side to if he gets an opportunity to get another year somewhere.
Yeah. Same. And I've heard rumblings about, you know, hey, maybe wanted to go play for his dad, you know, one last year. You know, also actually heard rumblings that, you know, and this is definitely not, you know, a fact by any means, but just something that I've heard, you know, message boards, Twitter, whatever it is, but, you know, that, hey, he is going to try to go somewhere else to try to find another year, whether that be D1, you know, whether that be D2, whatever it is. But, I mean, good player. You know, I was really, really high on him coming out of high school. Just don't think he ever found his, you know, I don't think he ever found a stride, whatever you want to call it, while he was at UNI, whether that be playing time, whether that be, you know, hey, I just got to try to get into a rhythm out here and try to figure out what I'm, you know, what I'm going to be on this team. I don't think that ever happened in the 4 years he was here. So, you know, that was kind of disappointing. However, you know, very cool in my opinion that, you know, hey, we want you, or yeah, I'd like to go through senior night and that type of thing, make it through the 4 years and then maybe try to find something else. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's a skilled player. He's a really good passing big man. You know, I think that's one of his, you know, best attributes that he could bring to the table. So having an offense where, hey, the big man has the ball in his hand, like you and I's does, you know, will be paramount for, I believe, for his success in the next role at the next school. But yeah, just got a lot of changes potentially coming. You know, good or bad, things could shake out better, things could shake out worse. You just never know. But yeah, I agree with you when you were mentioning Heisey that I think he could definitely play a big role on some good teams out there. So it'll be interesting to see where he potentially lands, you know, in my opinion. Hopefully, you know, he's back in Cedar Falls, but you know, obviously not sure about that quite yet.
So as we just real briefly, obviously don't know what this roster is going to look like. So looking forward to next year. Do we have anybody over 6'5" right now currently on the roster? What's the deal with that?
I mean, I think Titan's a bit over 6'5", but okay. You know, maybe not that much. Yeah, I mean, so we have, yeah, I mean, that is a big chunk of playing time, those names we mentioned that are in the portal. And obviously, you know, it's one of those deals too where a name or two more could be coming here in the future. You just don't know, but it will be interesting to see how they potentially even rebuild. I know Coach Jake's been very adamant about, you know, we're going to use the portal when we need to, but we're going to keep recruiting high school kids, and that's what we're going to do. I believe we even maybe talked about it on an episode, but yeah, it's great if it works, but you know, the way the game's going now, the way the portal has changed things, there's a chance that might not work. So yeah, it'll be interesting in the next couple of years for sure.
I feel like we won't dive too deep into it, but the portal and just the way that has impacted recruiting, I think is having a bigger impact on those high school kids, maybe more than a lot of people think or want to realize.
Yeah.
There's a lot of colleges, a lot of universities out there that honestly aren't even spending much time at the high schools anymore.
Right.
They would 100%. They'd rather get bounce backs. They'd rather get portals. They'd rather get people who go and, you know, play a year, get 2 years, you know, and then get them that way. And so it's hard. I mean, you think about it. I mean, and this maybe more as a heads up to the parents out there who are just really trying to get their kid a scholarship or whatever it might be. It's just different. Like it might be, you might have to go and play a year or two and, you know, work your way up. And it's just kind of the nature of the game, and it's weird, and it's only going to continue to keep changing. And I feel like continue to be more and more, you know, these older, it'll be interesting once you get rid of the COVID year. And everybody I feel like now all of a sudden you kind of know where everyone lands as far as how many years do they have left? Are they coming back? Are they not coming back? That'll help, but you're still, I mean, the player movement is still going to be just as crazy, if not crazier.
Yeah. I mean, there's gotta be, I mean, it's what are we like 3 years into this NIL stuff in the transfer portal? And I mean, maybe there has been a couple rules created around it, but not many. And it still feels like, man, there could be just make a couple changes to it, and it could make things a little easier on the coaches, a little easier on the universities, but still obviously keep the, you know, the flexibility for the players, because that's a big deal too. You know, you know, you read stuff all the time about how, hey, we give all these players a lot of shit about, you know, leaving after a year, but hey, coaches can leave whenever the heck they want to too. So really kind of putting that power in the players' hands, putting that flexibility in the players' hands still, but, you know, also trying to make things a little easier for these coaches. Cause I can't even imagine, you know, you're playing in this, you're coaching in the NCAA tournament, potentially one of the biggest games of your coaching career, and you still have to continue to keep an eye on the portal because there could be dudes that you need on your team, that you want on your team, who are entering the portal on that day or that week, whatever it is. So it's a weird time, and you know, I know there will be changes made around it, but I just feel like, man, if we haven't made changes in 3 years, what are we doing? Like, it just needs to, there needs to be some boundaries around it, but maybe a conversation for another podcast.
Right. Well, and two, I mean, taking different sport, but obviously the Caden Proctor deal with him and the money that was or wasn't exchanged hands for obviously nothing in return. And so there definitely has to be like, I mean, there's gotta be some contracts or something. Yeah. The movement is fine, but there's gotta be some parameters as far as like how this works. And especially when it comes to money exchange in hands, like things have to happen. Obviously that's a little bit different level than what we're talking about here, but it'll be interesting to continue to follow and see how that changes. And so with that, let's move over to the women's side real quickly here. We'll jump into Drake women, who had a wonderful year this year. They were a lot of fun to watch, a lot of fun to follow, getting two conference championships, winning the regular season Valley, and then going over to the Quad Cities and winning the tournament championship on, which I assume everybody at this point had seen the championship at least the last 2.6 seconds. And the shot by Anna Miller to be able to punch their ticket to the NCAA tournament. That was a lot of fun. I had a chance to go over. I actually took my middle two kids over to Hoops in the Heartland over there in the Quad Cities and saw a bunch of good basketball games. Awesome venue, awesome little event to take the family over to, just from an ease standpoint of parking right next to the stadium and kind of getting in and getting seats. And schedule worked out perfectly because we were able to go over Friday, watch Drake. Then you and I played the following game. And so we caught two games there, and then they played each other the next day. And so it was awesome. It was a lot of fun, but this Drake women's team also been a lot of fun because my little 8-year-old is just absolutely falling in love with the Drake women. And so credit to them and their program too for embracing that and just sparking that fire in her, which has been a lot of fun for me as a dad and a podcaster and a hoop junkie and all the things that have come with having an opportunity to follow this team and along this year. And it's you know, and a lot of these women too, just watching their growth and as players and as individuals, has been really great. Unfortunately, we're going to see the end of the Grace Berg era at Drake after this year. Wonderful career, obviously Indianola native that made the move to Missouri. And so her coming up to Drake has been a really good thing for her and for the program as well. And so that's going to be a big loss there. And then Taylor McCauley as well. She'll be moving on, had a nice career, my daughter's favorite player too. And so I've really gotten to know Taylor quite well here over this last season. And so seeing her move on is definitely a sad thing for the Drake program, but also for the Claude House. We have, just to tell a little bit of a story, my daughter had to, as we were over at the Quad Cities, had to sit in seat 3, which is Taylor's number, like all the time.
I love that.
And someone came and just kind of crunched us, like we were probably sitting in their seats. And so she just had to move down a row so she could still sit in seat 3. So it's pretty awesome to be able to see her understand that. But yeah, definitely gonna miss Taylor and what she brings to the team. And then Anna Brown is the other one too. She's transfer in from Loyola, Waukee native, and so she'll be moving on. And so two starters out of the bunch will be moving, and then you also have Megan Meyer, who, interesting story with her coming back. Obviously, yeah, if you've watched any of the games, they, on every broadcast they talk about it, but blew her ACL last year, would have been her senior year, and then decided to move on, and then was sitting actually getting ready for Jack Campbell's playoff game out in San Francisco, and said, actually, so it kind of spurred from the TCU situation where they didn't have enough players and had to forfeit. And I guess Jack brought it up and was like, hey, could you go play for them? And she's like, and it sounded like they were, yeah, come on down. And she's like, well, let's talk to Drake first. And so then she talked to Drake and came back. And so she played the last 14 games, I believe it was.
Yep.
Nice addition to have her too. I mean, she's just a super high basketball IQ. You could tell that the knee, she said it felt fine and everything was great, but it just seemed like it between picking things up in the middle of the season and kind of getting back under the knee. It didn't seem like maybe it was quite as crisp and clean as it was prior, but she still shoots snot out of it. She still has a really high IQ. And then I just having an older voice, I feel like, on the team always helps. And so a lot of fun. And then obviously Kate Denebier got Missouri Valley Player of the Year this year, had a wonderful season. She's the head of that team. She's the one that makes them go. And some nights it's passing, some nights it's defense, some nights it's scoring, and some nights it's all three. And so she's a lot of fun to watch. It'd be interesting to see how she, you know, evolves in her role next year with the absence of those girls. And, you know, Anna Miller that I mentioned before hit the game winner. She'll be coming back too. And Courtney Becker, well, the other starter who I would say probably most improved player this year, really kind of came on late. I would say the last 10, 12 games, Courtney was doing things out there that, just didn't know that she was capable of flying all over the place, making shots, making free throws, making all the hustle plays that she always made playing defense. And so it'll be interesting when those three is your core, how they fill in from there off of two championships and a tough matchup against Colorado. I mean, that team, I mean, that is a five seed. Oh, man, that's obviously, as they showed today, they got a win over Kansas State. That, I mean, that's a tough five seed. Yeah. Like probably the one that you don't want to play, and just athletically sized too, just made for a tough matchup for Drake. And they hung in there, played really well first half. And then it just kind of seemed like that athleticism kind of separated itself a little bit in the second half. But credit to those girls, credit to Coach Pullman and her staff. Wonderful season, a lot of fun to watch there with the Drake women this past season.
Yeah, I mean, we've been very lucky here in Des Moines and Iowa for that matter. But, you know, having a good Drake men's team, a good Drake women's team, that, you know, we can hop in the car and be there in half an hour to watch, has been fun. And you mentioned a couple of those girls. You know, we've had quite a few of those on the podcast. So cool to connect with them. Cool to, you know, have more of a reason to be into all those games, that program, you know, with Allison at the helm. I watched Allison play high school all the time. She was from a town that's probably 10 or 12 minutes away from my hometown. And then at UNI, obviously too, when I would, we were pretty close there as well. So going to watch her and now, you know, seeing her have success, seeing her come into her own as a head coach, has been very cool. And not to mention, you know, the fact that the Drake men and the Drake women both had the Player of the Year in the Missouri Valley. Like, that's awesome. That is awesome. Yeah. So, you know, with every end to the year, it kind of, it obviously, you know, has that end to an era with a lot of teams, with a lot of people, with a lot of players. However, you know, we've seen the coaching staff on the men's side do it. And now I'm very confident the women's side can do it too, but, you know, just reload and keep going. You know, they got a good staff. They have really good coaches, and have now the success to kind of back up those recruits and say, hey, come to Drake. This is what we do. This is how we do it. And so it'll be a lot of fun to kind of watch that team, watch that coaching staff grow into, you know, a powerhouse in the Missouri Valley.
Well, and I think too, one of the things with Drake and the style that they play, it's definitely entertaining, one from a viewing standpoint, but also from a recruiting standpoint. I feel like it almost recruits itself. Like if you want to go out there and get up and down and, you know, take open shots. And I mean, the misconception is that they just bomb threes all the time, when obviously they're actually really points in the paint heavy, with a lot of basket cuts and high low action stuff that they do. But then, you know, defensively they'll get out and, you know, they play their little matchup zone that they do and try to extend and get steals and get run outs and stuff. And so yeah, it'll be super interesting to see, you know, because all those girls that I mentioned, you know, a lot of them were there when Jenny was there. And so you know, now starting to see this next wave of who Allison and her staff is able to bring in and how they fit the few changes that, you know, that they've made to the program. And obviously the success that they've had, like you mentioned, having the Valley Player of the Year and Coach of the Year in the same, and Defensive Player of the Year all in the same is pretty impressive. And so definitely excited, looking forward to more and seeing what comes with the Drake women's program. And with that, let's transition over to the UNI women, who just came, wrapped their season up tonight down in St. Louis with a NIT loss down there. I'm not exactly sure how this works, because UNI got a bye. So they didn't have to play, but then they had to go to St. Louis.
To St. Louis, yep.
Yeah, and so don't exactly know what or how that all sets up. I know it's probably more a regional schematic way of money, and teams have to travel. I know that they just, the travel part of the NIT, I know, is a much bigger, well, much bigger thought than the NCAA tournament.
We'll have to bring Oak on. He can explain that.
We'll have to talk a little bit more about it. I talked talked with Coach Oakland prior to them knowing where they were going. And so, yeah, definitely be interested to figure out exactly where and how that works. But looking at that program, or looking at that team this year, obviously high hopes. They were picked first in the preseason to win the league. Grace Buffelli was picked to be player of the year. And then they just can't stay healthy. They just had a tough time. I mean, Amaya was hurt early, and then she came back, and then Buffelli went down. Emerson Green, then Torrey. I mean, they just had a tough time staying healthy. They showed flashes of what the potential looks like if everyone was healthy. You know, I think they ended the year right at 500. I think 16-16, 14-6 in the Valley. But there are some games, I mean, you could see they come out and they put 90 on you before you knew what happened. And it's like, oh, wow, this team can really go when they're healthy. And they're deep too. Maybe not as deep as they need to be at some positions, but in full go, they're a nice team, fun to watch too. It'll be interesting to see, you know, they lose a few. I think Kaylin Morgan is the only starter that they will lose. And then I think there's one of the 6'3" girl, the other big girl too. I think she's a senior as well. But the core, they all bring back. And so it'll be interesting to see what they're able to do in, you know, essentially Maya and Buffelli's swan song, their final ride there at UNI, two talented players along with, you know, the rest of those girls, Keba as well too. Keba, she came around second, I would say, really kind of second. So yeah, I'd say after break, seemed to get more aggressive, more confident, started shooting the shit out of the ball there for a while. And so that was fun. Good to see. That's a huge relief off of Maya, especially on the perimeter when you're able to stretch it. And Buffelli, honestly, because it just gives her more space to work when you have shooting. Like I said, then Emerson Green going down was big, because that's another big guard and some shooting too that they were without. But they were kind of up and down, I felt like, along with their health this year. And so they're going to need to kind of come together here and put a few things together and hopefully be able to kind of get rid of that injury bug and have a nice season next year.
Yeah. Does Emerson have another year?
I believe so.
Okay.
I think she's a junior.
It'll be interesting with that too, because obviously if I remember right, maybe mid-February is when she went down. Yeah. And, you know, you think about that injury and the recovery and the rehab, sometimes that's, you know, sometimes it can be 6 months, sometimes it can be 12 months. So we'll be interesting to kind of monitor that to see how things are progressing and, you know, what that looks like on the way up. But yeah, I agree with everything you said. You know, obviously I don't necessarily watch women's basketball as much as you. However, the games I watch of UNI, you're exactly right that they play a fun style of basketball. When you have Maya with the ball in her hand most of the time, you know, that makes things fun to watch. Obviously very skilled. And, you know, with Grace down low and, you know, all those rebounds and the injuries too, you mentioned too, were obviously unfortunate. And, with them being predicted to finish first and maybe not living up to that, hard to do that when you have those injuries. And, obviously with our relationship with Coach Oakland, you know, we stay pretty close to that. And I think that with that coaching staff, you know, talk a lot about coaching staffs on here, but, you know, with that staff, I think they only have good days ahead of them. And they recruit the right way. You know, there's a lot of, we've talked about it before. There's a lot of Iowa girls on Drake and UNI's team, which just makes things a lot more enjoyable for us people here in Iowa, us, I guess, fans in Iowa, watching. So excited for the future of the Panther women's program. And hopefully, like you said, yeah, hopefully they can stay away from that injury bug next season and hopefully bring the right pieces back and maybe even add a couple more, but excited for the future there too.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Like you said, the coaching staff is always fun to watch, and obviously we know them on a little bit more personal level than maybe some around. But their chess match of which they have with Drake is always fun for me. Just knowing as much as I know about the Drake program and then the UNI program as well, it's so much fun. And obviously that they know of each other. And that's the thing. Like, there's no secrets between those two, and so it's just a matter of, for me as a fan, I just sit back and be like, all right, how are they going to do this? And so it's fun to watch. Okay, UNI is coming out in this defense and they're trying to take this away. And how's Drake going to respond? And I enjoyed the chess match between those two, and look forward to a lot more of that, as that coaching staff at UNI is a lot of fun. And, Drake, like we said as well. And so the weird thing too, they're full of, it's funny how both rosters are full of Iowa girls, but truthfully, again, knowing what I kind of know about both those programs, they don't necessarily compete for recruits a lot, which is kind of interesting.
That's interesting.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, they kind of go for different type players. And so it's funny on how sometimes they aren't actually competing as much as you might think. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens. Speaking of that too, I did see where, I'm blanking on her name now, but the girl from Bradley, she's originally from Waterloo. She played guard for Waterloo West on a couple of those teams that made those final runs. That's going to bug me. Anyway, she had a heck of a year. I believe she was third team all Missouri Valley this year as a true freshman at Bradley. Anyway, she jumped in the portal, I saw this week, and I watched her twice, I think. I saw her here at the Knapp Center, and I feel like I saw her another. I mean, she can go out and she can get a bucket whenever she needs to. Sure. And so it'll be interesting to see with her in the portal what or where that kind of ends up shaking out, again, with the Iowa ties. And then a girl from Roland Story that also played at Bradley, she was a freshman. She's also in the portal. So we have two starters out of the Valley from Iowa in the portal. And so I mentioned that we're not necessarily competing for recruits, but it'll be interesting to watch what happens. Yeah, that could change. And they're different players. I obviously should have looked up and remembered their names a little bit better, but the girl from Roland Story is a shooter. She's a knockdown shooter. And so it'd be interesting to see maybe tends to lean more on a fit for Drake on that side of things, whereas the girl from Waterloo West is, she's just kind of more of a ball dominant, still shoots the snot out of it, but I could see her playing alongside Maya and looking real nice in that role. And so yeah, it'll be fun. It's fun. I mean it's March. We have March Madness, we have NIT, we have men's NIT, which got Hawkeyes down 5 right now on TV. We have transfer portal. We have coaches moving. There's not a better time of the year, Adam, than being able to, right now in March, being able to watch all these games, being able to flip through them. And you mentioned it too. It's like you get, at least for me, it's like you get one little connection. If you come on the podcast or I talk to you at this or whatever it is, all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I'm watching, I'm checking in, I want to see what's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, it is something where, yeah, I'm watching a disgusting amount of games that often are not the game that everybody else is watching, because I'm like, well, you and I women are playing right now. I'm watching that on ESPN+, I got whatever it is. And it's like trying to follow all these programs that we have going on in the wonderful basketball that we have in our state, which is what the Shooter's Touch is all about, man. This is it. This is what we do. Hoops Iowa.
I say this all the time, but one of the best parts about March is everybody talks about basketball as much as I typically talk about basketball. So
right.
It's like it's normal now. So that's one of the best parts about March. Obviously, all the basketball as well. I mean, my wife complains about it all the time, that is there always basketball on? And in March, there is always basketball on. There's rare times that you will find me not watching basketball in March. So yeah, it's It's great. Like I said, obviously Hawks maybe need a little bit of comeback here in this NIT game against Utah. But man, got the Drake. Obviously the Drake men lost a tough one against Wash U. But still got the Clones headed to Boston Sweet 16. Just a incredible team that they have. They're so fun to watch too. Just their high intensity. They can score this year, obviously, so that always helps things. But yeah, agree with you 1,000% there. NCAA tournament, have March time, big time.
We also have Iowa State women that are probably tipping off like right now, right?
Oh, man, yeah,
they had the late game. And so they get that one fired up here. That'll be a good little nightcap to be able to watch the end of that Iowa State game. Audie Crooks, obviously, on what she just did on
absolute animal. Gosh, 40, that was incredible.
40 ball on 90% shooting the other night.
Freshman.
Yeah, freshman, crazy. That's outgoing native, so we'll definitely got to get her on the pod. I've had a couple people to be like, how come? I'm like, I know, and her uncle's one of my really good buddies too. So it's like, well, we're going to make it happen. I'm saying it right now. I'm putting it on the podcast. Audie will be on the pod here, hopefully this summer. She does unbelievable too. If you listen to anything that she does, like post game or any of her interview stuff, it's like, how is she a freshman? Yeah. Like, she is so mature for her age. It's unbelievable.
That's awesome.
It's fun watching her and seeing everything that she's got going on. Iowa women, obviously the whole country's watching them. It's one of those things too. It's so funny. I mean, you know, give us a little bit of a break, because we have so much awesome hoops going on in and throughout our state. And so it feels like sometimes with those programs, those big programs that are heavily covered, obviously we shy away from a little bit from our coverage, because we're trying to help you guys out. And, you know, obviously we do the Hoop Troop and a lot of the high school stuff. You know, we're talking some D3, some D2, you know, Upper Iowa making their tournament on the men's side. Obviously, the run that the Warburg women went on to the Final Four on the D3 side. JUCO right now, wild as far as what's going on, too. I mean, we have DMAC and Ellsworth and all these guys that just all they do is win. It's like I'm trying to keep up with all that, too, and try to help you guys as much as you can. But just know that the state of Iowa just plays really good basketball. Yeah. Largely because we have really good coaches. And so we'll continue to try to bring some more of those stories to you guys in our normal podcast as well. We're going to get back into some interviews here once these coaches, once their life settles down a little bit, we'll do a little bit more of that. We do have to recap with the Troopers yet. Got to talk IBCA, see how that all went. We'll talk to Betts on that. Obviously, Tony Rowe's got all of his summer stuff going on too, so we'll get him on here, talk a little bit about all that. A lot of fun. We appreciate you listening. Hopefully you enjoyed this one, get you all caught up on Drake and UNI. Anything on the way out, Adam? I think we did it.
That's it. I got some basketball to watch, so let's end this thing.
Let's do it. As always, shoot.